You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Rohit Bhargava. Rohit is a non-obvious trend curator, founder of the Influential Marketing Group, and an expert in helping brands and leaders be more influential. He is the Wall Street Journal best-selling author of 5 books on topics as wide-ranging as the future of business, building a brand with personality, and why leaders never eat cauliflower. Rohit has advised hundreds of global brands and also teaches at Georgetown University. A 2-time TEDx speaker, Rohit has keynoted events in 31 countries and is regularly featured as a marketing expert by media such as the New York Times, Harvard Business Review, and NPR. Rohit, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So your book is exciting in a lot of ways. It's one of those that I had seen, speaking specifically about non-obvious, but I didn't realize all of the work that you put into this. And it might have been, you know, that I had picked up a copy and then had just kind of kept consistently seeing it. But for those that don't know, your process with this work in particular is pretty remarkable. Most people write a book and leave it alone. They move on to the next thing.
Yeah, most people are actually intelligent about writing a book in the sense that they write it once and then they talk about it. And I do probably the dumbest thing that I've ever heard an author do, which is every year I rewrite about 35% of the book. And I do that year after year, which is a lot of work, as you said. But the reason I do it is because the format of the book is that the first half is about how to predict the future. So it's a very kind of lesson-based and it's got a method behind curating ideas and predicting the future. And that part doesn't change that much from year to year. But the second part is 15 trends that are changing business in the upcoming year. And so every year I have 15 new trends and brand new research, and I basically throw away that entire section from the previous year and write a brand new one.
So when you first – what led you to do this in the first place in terms of writing about the future and trends? What was the first year?
So the first year – and this thing's really kind of evolved for me. So the first year was 2011. And in 2011, I published a PowerPoint presentation all about 15 trends. And that was where I started, and it was all marketing and social media trends at that time. And that ended up getting pretty good visibility. I basically did it as a visual blog post. That was my goal with it. And it actually passed, I think, like 100,000 views on SlideShare, and just like a lot of people were interested because it was trends and it was the end of the year, and that's what people wanted to see. So the following year, I published my 2012 trend report, which did it the same thing, but did it a little bit more in detail. And that passed like 300,000 views on SlideShare. And so I started realizing, hey, this is something people really want. And so in 2013, I extended it even further, and it became more about kind of broader trends, not just marketing and social media. It was 100 pages with lots of visual examples instead of like 15 or 20 pages. And I did a companion ebook on the Kindle. And the ebook was, here are the 15 trends and here's how to use them in business. So it made it more actionable. And so that book on the Kindle started to generate some revenue. It hit number one in a couple of different categories. And so in 2014, I did the same thing. So I did the first 2 years were just the visual presentation. The next 2 years were a visual presentation plus ebook. And then in 2015, I decided that I was going to do a full-length book where I was going to really talk about the process behind doing this and how to do it yourself and then do the trends and then talk about like how to use the trends. So that was the format that I had. And in 2015, it hit the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. And then from there, it just kind of took off.
It's amazing. And again, I think that not everybody would have the work to put all of that together. But I would really think that with your approach, you kind of squarely own the future in terms of looking at it from a trend standpoint.
Well, it's been good for me because it's just been a platform that continues to grow, and it gives me a chance to have new ideas and not necessarily throw away the old ideas either. I mean, it was a big deal for me to say, okay, I'm doing this new every year, but that doesn't mean that the trends that I predicted last year all of a sudden stop being relevant. And so I started doing a really robust index and appendix at the end of each new edition where I talked about the previous year's trends. And so in the new version, I have a really detailed look at 100 previously predicted trends along with grades for each one and how they did. And so I'm really trying to make it something that is more longer lasting as opposed to just the trends for this year.
And can I also say about those appendices at the end with the previous year's trends, you not only recap them, but it is very visual. So just for scanning those, I mean, it's incredibly useful. And I always like when it's packaged in an easy to use way, right? It's one thing to have the info there, but when it is easy to access, easy to understand, it's a tool you're going to use more.
Yeah, and you know, each trend has an icon, and a lot of it is based on, I mean, I have the luxury of now traveling around the world and speaking to audiences and doing workshops, and so I get a lot of feedback on the trends, on how they're presented, on whether they're meaningful, what makes them more meaningful versus less meaningful. So each year, the book takes another step forward in terms of how it presents the trends and the way that it's packaged.
So back to the first part that you were noting that doesn't change, kind of your approach in predicting the future, how would you sum that up?
I think that the best way of summing it up is I am an idea collector that doesn't lose his best ideas. And I think what ends up happening to a lot of us is we might collect ideas, we might write down things that we hear, but then we lose that piece of paper. You know, we forget about it. We don't really return to it. We don't have any discipline around why we would go back to it. And so what ends up happening is we lose some of our best ideas because we just don't have a reason or a way to go back to them. And so the method that I've developed is really about saving and using your best ideas for something. Now, in my case, the something happens to be at the end of every year I produce this trend report. But for other people, it doesn't have to be about the trend report. It could be about launching a new product. It could be about figuring out the strategy for your startup. I mean, whatever the idea is, spotting these patterns and then turning it into something useful is really the key.
That's interesting. I mean, I think pattern recognition is incredibly interesting. And I would think that both in terms of what you can do daily in your work, in your business, but also with what you're looking at, I would have to imagine that some definite patterns are emerging as you look at all of this year on year.
There are, yeah, a ton of patterns, and so you see some connections between them year after year, it's interesting because sometimes you spot one thing. Like, for example, I had a trend 2 years ago that I called glanceable media. And it was all about how, you know, all media is just being consumed in shorter and shorter spans of time. And so you have to have this kind of headline BuzzFeed-esque way of looking at media. And that's kind of what everybody was doing. And this year, there's a little more hope in the world, I think, because one of the trends that I had, something I call deep diving, glanceable media, we're now on a few times we as individuals want to spend a lot of time. Something. We want to read a long, beautifully written investigative journalism article, but we want to do it on our own time. And so now you've got platforms like Wired Magazine having an entire section of their site called wired.com/longreads. And it's articles from 4 years ago that are still relevant that are long stories. And they're bringing them to the surface and letting people read them when they have time.
So, and I think to your point of patterns, so there's a relationship between that. Don't you think instead of, I think this is what you're saying, that as opposed to being a part of two separate things, oh, it was this, now it's that, it's kind of a part of something singular, a part of a bigger trend in what we're looking at, where we're spending time. Is that it?
What you're describing is in the world of trends and trend forecasting, that's usually what people call a macro trend or a mega trend. Right. It's something that has gone over the span of multiple years. It's like the shift from a industrial economy to a information economy. And there's a lot of people kind of writing about these macro shifts in the world. And, you know, I love thinking about that stuff, but I find it to be less useful and practical in the day-to-day of running your business, trying to be smart in your career, moving forward. And so I intentionally kind of take my lens and shine it on trends on an annual basis. And so for that reason, I don't really call myself a futurist because I don't think I look far enough into the future to be what, you know, anyone would traditionally refer to as a futurist. Instead, I spend most of my time making patterns and connections with things that will take off in the next year or two or three. And that's the lens that I really focus on. And so for me, when I go out and I speak about these things, first of all, it's really current because obviously I'm speaking about now. But also it gives me a chance to focus a little bit more attention on the method of thinking that I'm advocating. And the trends are just the way that I bring this method of thinking to life.
Yeah, whenever I find myself talking about the future, I always try to draw the lines between, because I think it's easy to get your head kind of up in the clouds, the kind of flying car, what could be, versus what you need to actually run your business differently, make decisions based on the world around you.
Yeah, and I think that what we all want from trends is we want to be able to like see into the near future in a way that's useful.
Yeah. So to that point, I mean, what are, you know, of what you've scanned for 2017, what are some of those, things that people can use to adjust in their business?
Well, I think the nice thing about the way I do it is I believe that every single one of the 15 trends has some application in terms of how you could adjust your business. But just to give you an example, one of the trends, and they're actually in five different categories. So for your listeners who are unfamiliar with the format, they're no longer just marketing and social media trends. That's just one of five categories now. And the other categories are culture and consumer behavior, media and education, tech and design, and economics and entrepreneurship. So in those five categories, there's three trends per category, and so you can do the math and figure out how it's structured. One of the marketing and social media trends that was particularly interesting for me was writing about was passive loyalty. And passive loyalty was this idea that there is lots of so-called loyalty among consumers that is simply loyalty out of convenience or habit or price. Which isn't really true loyalty if you think about it, because as soon as something else comes along that's more convenient or that's on the way home from work or that has a better price, you switch. And so a perfect example of that is all these cell phone companies that say, hey, we'll pay $650 for you to – you will pay your phone off and you can just switch to us and there's no difference between any of these networks. And people have very low loyalty in that sector. And so what you used to think about as customer loyalty, which is a customer that buys from you more than once or over and over, and there used to be these formulas among CPG brands to say if a customer buys from you five or more times in the span of 2 months, they're a loyal customer. And now like they got to throw all that math out the window because people can switch so easily and the cost of switching is basically nothing. And so customers that they used to think were loyal are actually just passively loyal. And so the learning there is how do you as a brand – first of all, segment your so-called loyal consumers into passively loyal and actively loyal? And then how do you move more consumers from being passively loyal to being actively loyal? And what does that take?
Yeah, that's incredibly interesting, that concept of passive loyalty versus active loyalty, because I think that that's probably a translation that many are missing, that those are not easy dots to connect.
Yeah, and I spend a lot of – I mean, what I love with trends, and this may be my English major kind of resurfacing itself, but one of the things I love when I'm naming trends is to put two unexpected terms together. And if you thought about loyalty and then you think about passive or someone being passive, those are kind of opposite ideas, right? I mean, if you're loyal, then you're not really passive. You have a belief. You're loyal. And when you stick them together, all of a sudden it kind of – it reduces the value of loyalty a little bit, and it forces you to think, oh, you know, is loyalty really loyalty? And that's the kind of thing that I like to – I mean, you know, I don't like to get too philosophical. I'm a very practical kind of guy. But when it comes to naming these trends, I do spend a lot of time on the words that I use to bring it to life.
Well, and that's the other thing. Again, not to undermine any of the rest of the book, but just like I said with the appendices and the icons – how the rest of the book is organized. And again, with each of the trends and the corresponding chapters, they do have names that if you don't understand them immediately, they, like you said, combine a few of those words that you will want to understand, that you want to know more about as well. Speaking of who we want to know more about, what about today's consumer? You know, you talk about culture and consumer behavior. It seems increasingly that it's harder to understand who it is we're talking to and how to tailor what we're doing to what they want. Are there any things that we can look to in understanding today's irrational, seemingly irrational, consumers?
Yeah, I think, understanding their motivation is probably the number one thing. And one of the ideas that's been around for some time is that consumers believe and trust in brands that are more authentic. I mean, this idea of authenticity is, yeah, I think I could say it's overused at this point. You know, like everyone's talking about authenticity. But one of the trends that I wrote about was this idea of lovable imperfection. And the sense that the more authentic brands are the ones who aren't afraid to be flawed and live those flaws and say, you know what, we're human, we mess up. Sometimes we do things in imperfect ways and that kind of makes us real. And embracing that as a brand, I think, is one of the ways to build that trust among consumers.
Do you have favorite flawed brands, which is an odd thing to ask for, but are there ones that walk that talk really well?
Yeah, I mean, I have a bunch that I use when I present this trend in like a keynote or something. But one that really brings it to life, I think, is Jackie Chan, the actor, if you consider him a brand.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the things that is fascinating about him is he does all these amazing, crazy stunts. But at the end of every movie, there's always outtakes. And the outtakes show him like slamming into a wall and almost breaking his arm or getting carted away by like the ambulance or like, you know, just the screwing up the same stunt like 18 times before he finally gets it right. And in showing us that, they build his legitimacy as like this amazingly dedicated stuntman. Which, you know, a lot of front men for movies, like they don't do their own stunts. But this guy is like flying off of buildings and he's actually doing it. Or he's like wearing a T-shirt in like -6 degree temperatures and riding a snowmobile. And you're just like, this guy is crazy. But he builds so much credibility because you get to watch him screw up. Whereas if you just watch the movie where he did every stunt perfectly and then it ended and you never got the outtakes, you wouldn't have that much credibility in this guy. You'd think, oh, they're doing some tricks and it's not actually real. It's the outtakes. It's the screwing up that makes it real.
That's a good point. And I've never thought about the value of outtakes beyond, you know, just an audience perspective. Oh, it's fun. But when you think about like you said, if you consider Jackie Chan a brand, and I think, you know, so many, the best entertainment properties and entertainers are brands. But the role that that plays in communicating that on authenticity makes me think of the trouble that that Pixar went to with some of their movies, which I hate to break it to anybody, they don't involve actual actors, but they've gone to the trouble of creating and animating outtakes. And I think, wow, that it seems like they knew what they were trying to communicate, because they wanted outtakes to lend some of that humanity and authenticity to what they're doing and to their brand.
Yeah, it is a big sign of authenticity to be able to do that. So I can see why they do it.
So in looking kind of both directions like you do, looking ahead but also looking back, since you've embarked on this project, is there one that's kind of a trend or a strand of a trend, since again you've kind of grown the report beyond marketing and social media, but is there one strand of it that is really sort of a true north that's just always holding strong, or some aspect of something?
You know, I think that the universal human principles are what kind of are the true north when it comes to any of these trends. I mean, what I'm talking about is the themes of trust and influence and behavior, and why we do certain things, or why we believe in some people and why we don't believe in other people or other brands. And, you know, the same things kind of fuel that building of trust, you know, honesty, the idea of honesty in multiple formats, the idea of personal connection in many formats, the idea of respecting people and respecting their opinions and respecting diversity and how that factors into things, the need for technology to fit into our lives but not overpower our lives. I mean, these are all like central human themes that trends tend to revolve around. And so, you know, if there's macro ideas that bring things together, it's those central human themes.
That's such a good point. And again, it's big, and it's a part of so many different things. Later in the book, you talk about anti-trends. What's an anti-trend?
So an anti-trend is what usually happens as soon as something is identified as a trend. It means that more and more people are paying attention to it, and more people are doing it. And as soon as that starts to happen, and as soon as it starts to gain recognition, there's always going to be someone who says, oh, I need to do the exact opposite. There's always going to be some brand that says, you know, I can win by doing the opposite. And an anti-trend is kind of that phenomenon, because trends aren't like neatly packaged descriptions that describe every single person or every single brand in the entire world. Trends for me are like, my definition of a non-obvious trend is a curated observation of the accelerating present. So what I'm trying to describe is the present in a way that is accelerating, and the acceleration is what the trend is. But what that means is there's always going to be someone who's like pushing the brake pedal and turning right. And that doesn't mean the trend's not valid. It just means that there's someone who's doing something different. Because a trend's trying to describe something that's accelerating in a particular direction, and therefore a direction that you may want to think about.
That is interesting, because it does seem like, you know, you've got a whole stable of brands, of individuals that, hey, what if we just did the opposite? And I like your point, too, about it does not necessarily negate the trend.
Yeah, that's right. And especially because, you know, the temptation is, with my trends at least, for people to think, oh, this year's over, so that means this trend is over.
Yeah. Well, and I do think that's what I also think is fascinating, despite all of the work, is that we do get kind of cyclical of, oh, those were last year's trends, now on to, I need the new stack, because we're done with those ones. So I do think kind of the continuing evolution here is fascinating. So if I am with you briefly at the airport bar in an elevator, and I'm a business owner, and I'm going into the new year, and we're about to part ways, and I kind of know that you're doing something with trends in the world around me, what's something that you would say as we part ways, of what's one thing that folks should watch out for that they are probably not thinking of?
Well, I think that one thing that is really important to consider is like the role that technology is taking in our lives and in our businesses that is not necessarily determined by us. So there's a couple of trends in the report, like invisible technology or self-aware data, where what I'm talking about really is the idea of technology making decisions and doing things to help us, and that we need to have an awareness of what those choices are and how they actually impact us so that we can tailor them better for ourselves and business. So if I were to say like there's one kind of big thing around technology that I would tell someone, that might be it.
That's, yeah, and especially when I said sneaking up on someone, I do think that there's all sorts of aspects of what we're giving away information-wise as consumers that brands are using, how all of that is changing hands that that many of us aren't thinking about nearly enough and that we aren't thinking enough about as businesses, as marketers, talking to individuals as well.
That's right. Yeah.
So as we wrap up, I always try to ask you for a brand that has made you smile recently.
So I think one of my favorite brands that I've written about many times that probably isn't that familiar to many US-based marketers or other folks is a brand called Innocent Drinks, which is out of the UK, and they make smoothies. And they just have a great sense of humor in a British way, if you kind of are familiar with like a British wit. And so I have this one slide that I use sometimes in my presentations, and it's a photograph of the bottom of like a gallon, actually like a half gallon carton of a smoothie. And on the bottom of this smoothie, it just says very simply, and you have to imagine this with a British English accent, "Stop looking at my bottom." And it's just like the perfect example of like their sense of humor, like that they would put that on the bottom of a carton.
Well, and what a great sense of, again, connecting some of the things we were talking about with both authenticity and even how that manifests itself in terms of brand voice also.
Yeah, exactly. They just they have a keen sense of just, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a smoothie, and it's and the innocent part is there's not a lot of additives in there, but it's a smoothie. So have fun with it.
No kidding. Well, I like that. I have not heard of them. I'm going to go make sure I know about them. And if I can find that ad, I will embed it in our show notes because that sounds too fun not to include. So speaking of links and other important things, where can folks go to learn more about who you are, what you do, the new book, and everything in between?
The easiest place is probably my website, which is just my full name.com, so rohitbargava.com. And everything is linked off from there, so it should be pretty easy to find.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Rohit, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And as a reminder, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Speaking of trends, speaking of what's next, former guest Brian Kramer just came out with a list of 70 trends from digital marketing experts, including myself and many past guests right here from the show. So we will link up to that as a way to pay it forward and give a shout to our community as well. And a reminder, if you heard something that you liked on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can find links to everything we talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show there via iTunes and Stitcher. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review to help others find the show. And finally, On Brand is brought to you by my book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Order now at Amazon and check out getscrappybook.com for special offers and extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.